You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 24 June. We've got Micron up 10-fold in the last year, and they have results after market close today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments. ASP Isotopes, who of course took over Renergen, are finally getting some helium out of the ground. The biggest story perhaps is that, man, being a junior miner is not easy, even if you've got the commodity. Chatting with Justin Swartz from Old Mutual Investment Group. The recent summit between Xi Jinping and President Trump, and Xi Jinping was talking about the Thucydides trap. I want to dig into that and risks around it. And then we're chatting with John Lewis. We're talking the Saab Composite Leading Business Cycle Indicator, still positive but falling in April. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines: MoneyWeb, pothole signal repairs halted as City of Joburg liquidity concerns mount. First it was lights, now it's roads. The city is under pressure to account for dismal financial showing. Business day, Woolworths expands dark store footprint as online grocery demand surges. Facility in Wynberg in the Cape, dedicated to fulfilling online orders and boost the Dash delivery capacity. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.4%, NASDAQ down 3.3%. Easter is mostly green, Sydney is 0.1 higher, Tokyo is off 0.4%, Hong Kong up 0.2%, and Tencent almost 0.75% higher. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 4,077. Brent, 76.26. Platinum, 1,651. Palladium, 1,233. The Rand is 16.57. Bitcoin, 62,700. And top 40 opening call, red open, 420 points, 0.4% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments, where she is head of research. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. ASP Isotopes, they took over Renergen last year. Renergen, of course, down in the Free State, Virginia. They've got the helium project down there. Announcement yesterday that they've finally got a customer, a 5-year take-or-pay contract, an industrial Asian industrial gases company, about 15% of the capacity of helium out of the Virginia plant. Your thoughts? I mean, there's two questions. The first one is, more broadly, the ASP Isotopes, the Renergen, is there something here? It's a stock I still hold some of. It's deeply volatile, and I'm never quite sure if there really is much happening or just lots of hype.
Yeah, I think that's the million rand question right there, because I had a look at their latest investor presentation this morning as well. Mm. And 2026 is going to be a really big year for this stock and for the investment case for this company. And I think that this Renergen story is probably the first step in the right direction and the first step ticked. But in terms of the broader investment case for ASP Isotopes, they have three of their isotopes that are expected to enter the market this year. And those tick boxes, I think, will also be extremely important if that long-term investment case is to be believed, I guess.
It's that ability to deliver. And that's more broadly. I mean, junior mining is tough. I was digging through some of the junior copper mines on our exchange, Copper 360, Orion. They have Orion more into zinc. They've got the product in the ground. That's never the problem. Usually the problem is getting it to the surface and doing so profitably. It is tough being a miner.
Yeah, and you need to have the cash flows in order to get it to the surface. And therein lies the risk in investing in these companies as well, because they'll have some internal funding. They will also have the equity market to tap, but they won't want to do it too often because investors get really they get really frustrated with that. And then you have bank financing as well, and you've got some other kind of debt financing avenues. But the reality is that it becomes extremely complicated to fund, and you need to get to a point where you actually start seeing positive cash flows, or at least some cash flows coming out of these projects, in order for you to justify being an equity investor in these companies. So, I mean, as I said, the news around Renergen, I think, is a good step in the right direction, because that means that we actually have a little bit of visibility in terms of something actually coming into this business now.
Now, that's a good point around the funding. And I mean, phase two of the Renergen plant, they're apparently going to start in H2. I remember, I mean, the initial plan, and we're going way, way back, that was supposed to be in production by this year already. It's almost the CFOs maybe play an outsized role, because they're the ones who got to juggle this demand for cash, and it's a heavy demand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is why Renergen got into trouble in the first place, and why ASP Isotopes had the opportunity to acquire them, because ASP at the time had a big cash pile and they had the funding available to push through with this project. Because, I mean, otherwise, your funders don't want to put any more money into something that has delay after delay and maybe won't be viable ultimately. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult position to be in. And we want junior mining investing in South Africa. Yep. We want exploration and development. We want beneficiation. But it's very, very difficult to actually get to a place where you can do that profitably and you can actually generate a decent cash flow over time.
Yeah, it's a good point. We absolutely do want it. It is absolutely extremely difficult. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Appreciate the early morning. That's our question today on LinkedIn. Does this make ASP Isotope worth a look? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Jason Swartz, Portfolio Manager at Old Mutual Investment Group. Jason, appreciate the time. The Thucydides Trap, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. I don't know how many of us had heard of it until Xi Jinping made reference recently at the US-China summit. I suppose two questions to start. What is the trap, and why did Xi Jinping bring it up at the summit?
Yeah, it was also kind of a new term to me, but it's an old term because, you know, it's this trap where it talks about a new paradigm of major powers that are fighting for supremacy. And it goes back to, I think, the kind of Greek days where you had kind of Athens and Sparta that were fighting, because Athens was kind of an emerging power and Sparta was the superpower. And I mean, I think the reason he mentioned it is because, you know, there was a very important summit where he wanted to just frame where China's position was, and that he wanted the US and China to see themselves as almost equal powers, and that they could, I think his words were, they could transcend the Thucydides trap and kind of work together to become powers together. So I think that's super important, but it was quite a nice kind of analogy that he used. That was beautiful, actually.
It was. And I like the point that you make around transcend, because I think a lot of folks were like, ooh, you know, history tells us that this has invariably led to war, and this could, you know, is that what the threat was? I didn't think it was. Although, of course, Taiwan kind of then comes into the picture. And I don't know. I mean, that maybe that doesn't mean war, maybe it doesn't, but it certainly brings a little bit of sort of edginess to the whole process.
Yeah, I think Taiwan was the one area that China kind of were very strong. They were kind of very strong words around it, in that he said that the relationship would be in great jeopardy if they kind of mishandled Taiwan. And sure, I think it's super unlikely that anything happens there, because, you know, it would be such a disruption, because, you know, obviously we've got TSMC, you've got 90% of the world's semiconductors that are produced there. And if anything happens, it impacts AI, it impacts cars, it impacts telcos, it impacts defense. It causes a supply crisis. So it's unlikely to happen. But I do think that the US understands China's position on Taiwan. In fact, there was an arms deal that was meant to go ahead that the US actually paused because of those words, I suspect. So, you know, I think the US also wants to use it as a bit of a negotiating chip. But, you know, Taiwan is critical in terms of how this relationship pans out.
I get your point. And maybe from Xi Jinping, this was more around a case of, I don't know, almost sort of, I was going to say resetting, but I'm not sure, because Xi Jinping and, of course, Trump had their first term as well, sort of setting the stage
for how the two of them respond. Taiwan's one of the processors, but of course there's chips, there's AI, there's rare earth minerals, there's all the other bits that they need to negotiate as well.
Yeah, there is. And I think what was important is that Xi Jinping framed the leverage that they have, not only because of, I suppose, being indispensable from a diplomatic perspective to Iran. I mean, you can see how fragile and how unenforceable this current deal is. But I think the rare earth point you made is important because China's rare earth export control regime, I mean, I think this week alone, they blocked US their exports to two US rare earth companies. So already you can see how much of kind of power they've got just because of rare earths. And this is something that the US and Washington desperately needs, and China kind of has the stranglehold on it, and it's probably the biggest lever that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to the possibility of conflict. And it is probably a very, very low probability, but it's one of those that if it were to happen, the impact is going to be significant. Do you position some of the portfolio for such an eventuality? I mean, gold springs to mind, maybe hard assets, or is it something which it's too remote?
Yeah, it is pretty remote, but I think you do need to think about it.
Yeah.
Because if there is some sort of confrontation, I think most asset classes are going to struggle. I mean, you mentioned real assets like gold. Mm-hmm. You know, I would struggle to think about a scenario where treasuries do well, potentially the dollar. I mean, I think we're going through an environment where a lot of your traditional safe haven assets aren't really showing up as, providing that protection anymore. So it's difficult to think about where to hide outside of cash or hard currency. But I think, through the cycle, you want to have commodity exposure, you want to have gold exposure. And that's how we kind of also just thinking about it. But it's not something you can necessarily plan for. I think you just want to build a portfolio that's resilient enough that if there is a tail risk, that it has some protection in adverse scenario like this.
I like that. A portfolio needs to be resilient regardless. And I like your confrontation. It might not be conflict. It could just be some confrontation that we see. That's why you want that resilient part of the portfolio. Jason Swartz, Portfolio Manager, Old Mutual Investment Group. Appreciate the time.
Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm sitting with John Luce, independent economist. John, appreciate the time. The South African Reserve Bank, their composite lending business cycle indicator. Bit of a mouthful, but the April numbers are out. It is down from 5.8% in March to 4.1% in April. It's still positive, but you're going to tell me that that's quite a chunky drop and probably bad news.
Well, yes, if you look at the month-on-month, Simon, it was a noticeable drop of 1.8% from March to April, which is the biggest drop, month-on-month drop, since March 2023.
Oh, wow.
And I seem to remember that was when another oil price spike was building up.
Yeah.
So, and I think if one looks at the contributors to the decline, there's a whole load of them, 8 of the 11 indicators used in the composite business cycle indicator were negative contributors. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I think, indirectly reflect what went on in the Middle East. I think of business confidence, which second quarter business confidence was a negative contributor. A lot of that drop in the second quarter of business confidence had to do with inflation surge coming our way because petrol prices the beginning of April had risen sharply. And of course, that raises the fear of interest rate hiking as well, which came about then in May. So I think this has a lot to do with global factors. And not surprisingly, I think we all very much expected that we're probably going into a softer economic period because of that oil price and petrol price surge and the possibility of interest rate hiking as well.
Yeah, that's the key point, because this is for April. Now, to be clear, the oil price, the energy prices were markedly higher in March, but they hadn't yet got to the consumer. That only came through in April, which is when for this survey is. We also saw the RMB Business Economic Research business confidence dropping to, 39 in Q2, also from April.
Yes.
I mean, this is not a surprise. We don't need to be an economist to realize that the oil price going north of 100 and petrol and diesel shooting through the roof is going to be bad for economies generally and consumers particularly.
Yes, and I think what gets reflected in these figures, you mentioned the business confidence index.
Mm.
That decline from the first quarter was responding to negative factors such as fuel price increases, fuel being an input into a lot of production.
Yeah.
And of course, the concern, those consumer-facing businesses concerned about the impact on the consumer, the inflation rate's probably going to go up. I'm talking as we stood in April. And then, of course, the fears of interest rate hiking, which were justified. It all adds up to one should expect to see a decline in the composite business cycle indicator. Of course, there were other factors as well. The building plans approved, that was a negative.
Yeah.
Average hours worked per factory worker in manufacturing, that was a negative. Manufacturing not doing wonderfully. And even the growth in new passenger vehicle sales being a negative as well. So a lot of domestic factors being negative contributors, but I think in part they reflect what went on globally and which led to fuel price increases and inflation increases coming through.
Yeah, very much a global story, but hitting us locally as individuals, make no mistake about that. You've mentioned rate hikes. I mean, for this point, we, you know, in April, we kind of saw it coming, but we hadn't had the confirmation. We've now had that hike in May. The inflation data that came in at 4.5 instead of 4.7, a little bit better. Are we still likely to get a hike in July from the MPC?
I think we'll probably get one further hike, 25 basis points, and then the Reserve Bank's likely to stop. I think CPI inflation could still go higher in the when we get the June number. Mm-hmm. That might persuade them to just dampen the kill those second round effects off a little bit more by hiking interest rates. But if one looks at what's transpired in recent days, when I last looked today, Brent crude oil prices down in the 70s.
Yeah.
The signs that Iran and the US could be moving towards a settlement, a deal, but although it's a hazardous prediction to make. But the US, I think, really wants to extract itself from this conflict because of the cost of living increases with cost of living problems. And that's the campaign issue with their midterm elections coming up. So I think that helps. And the markets are responding to the more positive environment with drops in oil prices. It looks promising for fuel price declines coming through next month, to come through next month. And so I think as we go past July, the Reserve Bank could be looking at a significantly better inflation outlook. And it should my assumption of a settlement in the Middle East come to fruition, and then they would hold interest rates for some time. And I think either late this year or early next year, we could see a resumption of interest rate reductions.
Okay, maybe as soon as that. Lots of T's and C's, and I appreciate this. Things are fluid. Oil's looking good, but a lot can happen. There's talks happening in Switzerland. A last quick question. Are we going to see some house price slowdown in terms of home sales just because of, you know, I mean, 0.25% and even 0.5%, it's not massive, but there is a bit of a confidence issue in that regard and a bit of uncertainty, which could take some shine off what's been a bit of a nice recovery in house prices.
Yes, I think we could see a mild slowdown there. Possibly, given that interest rates have already risen, we may even be seeing some growth slowdown, at least a growth slowdown in credit-driven home buying, if not an all-out slowdown. And as the year progresses, I think we could see, as the stats here say, year-on-year house price growth rates come out. I think we could see slowdown, especially in the second part of the year. That's typically what happens. It's a very credit-dependent and interest rate sensitive market. So I would expect that, yes.
We'll leave it there. John Luce, independent economist. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Alicia Fulun yesterday. She, of course, MD, Merchant West Investment, talking about that Standard Bank update for the first 5 months of the year. Also, more broadly, talking banks. Asked you if there is value in banks, even notwithstanding that Standard Bank, case in point, has more than doubled in the last 2 years. She does still like banks. She thinks there is still some value. Standard Bank is her pick. When we asked you, over 40% said yes, more to go. A third said no. They seem to be fairly valued. The rest said they are expensive. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. And we will chat again tomorrow for Vinani results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.